All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So Carson Price for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. We're coming to you from the Nation Network studio built by Arbor Lee here at the Iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver, and a special welcome to our new neighbors, The Nails, a new salon that's opened up next door. So best of luck to Sean and his team. Welcome to the neighborhood here at the Wall Center. Matt Sakaris alongside Blake Price, Grady Sass, hitting switches, conducting things with Sean Chessman. We got a big show coming up, and it's all brought to you by Applewood Auto Group.
And Applewood Infinity in Langley has the 2024 QX80. Get everything in there that you need. It's a nice hulking SUV. Take you from A to B in style. Lease it at 0.99% for 18 months on all trims, and you get non-stack cash of $9,000. All at Applewood Infinity in Langley. It's all good at Applewood.
Our poll question today, should Tocchet have challenged for goaltender interference? Yes or no? You can vote at Sakarison Price on Twitter and YouTube. And Blake, we discussed this a little bit on our post-game podcast Tuesday evening. And if you're not familiar, folks, we are doing very bite-sized, manageable post-game podcasts. They're usually out within an hour of the final horn after these hockey games. Blake, I was skeptical about it last night when we did the pod. I am now resolute. No. I know Tocchet called it 50-50 in the post game. Now, Rick lives in Vegas and has a history with gambling. I think the more Rick watches it, the more it's closer to 75-25. No. And for many reasons here, first and foremost, and I thought I saw this on the video, and I wasn't sure when we were talking about it yesterday, Blake, but I've gone back and watched it, God, many, many times over. First of all, it's called a goal on the ice. So you have to find evidence to overturn.
Yeah.
Secondly, Teddy Bluger's right skate hits Artur Shilov's in the glove, and that's what begins the backward motion of the goaltender back towards his net. The puck's never controlled. In fact, I'm not even sure the puck ever stops, Blake. I think it's forever loose, even if it's obscured at one point below his jersey. So I realize Nyquist comes crashing in. Was it Myers or Zadorov who's checking him there? And that causes the big propulsion into the net. But I think that puck, and I think Shilov, by virtue of the contact with Bluger's skate, is already headed back towards the net. So I can understand saying challenge. You're up 3-1 in the series. It's a huge goal. Fair enough. You want to roll the dice, roll the dice. But I just don't think that goal would have been overturned.
I'm watching it on loop right now, Matt. And Bluger is completely stationary, and so is Shelov at the moment Nyquist comes in. There's no
watch his right toe. Watch it make contact with the goaltender's glove hand.
With the goaltender's glove hand.
Yeah. Bluger's right foot makes contact with the goaltender's glove before Nyquist with arrives
blocker,
on the
with
scene.
The blocker.
There's the blocker.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but the puck is at his waist. It's the puck's not moving until Nyquist comes crashing in. Mm-hmm. I'm the other way. I'm 75-25 now.
Oh,
I've swung the other direction. Oh, yeah.
Grady, break the tie here.
Goaltender interference.
Yeah.
I just didn't like how Bluger got propelled into Shelov's to bump it. I understand the ruling is, but it just create that change.
The other
but,
part of it is
Bluger only gets propelled after he makes contact on his own volition with the goaltender.
Yeah.
But Bluger's at a standstill. As I said, if you look at it, him and Shelov are stationary when Nyquist comes crashing in.
After he has kicked him in the glove or in the blocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's way down at the other post.
If you watch, Shelov starts drifting back the moment that contact is made. And again, the puck is certainly not controlled.
I think with that amount of time left.
It's not frozen.
No, it's not frozen. No.
No one is making the argument the puck is frozen.
No. But it's propelled in by the collision there. I think there's enough time left in the period where you take that chance. You take that chance. In a series where goals have been at a premium and your penalty kill have been red hot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you and especially in the wake of what we saw the previous night in Florida.
Mm-hmm. I understand that rationale and reasoning as well. The previous night in Florida, and incidentally, the lawyer from Prince George has apologized comments, John Cooper, Tampa Bay Lightning coach.
And not a surprise.
You got to take the chance, though, because you just don't know where they're going to go with that.
Yeah. And more often than not, it is a dangerous game to play that with the National Hockey League. Again, I can understand people saying, take the chance. This was the spot to take the chance. I just, given the goal was called a good goal on the ice, given you've got a lot going on there, that I think complicates a cut and dry goaltender interference call. I'm just not sure they would have won the
challenge. I think they also fell in love with their process and that they've got it right. The previous times they did not go down that road. They were rewarded because I think they made the right choice and they overcame those problems. And, but I think they fell in love with their patience almost.
Yep. And the other thing there, that's the 1-1 goal, right? Like that's not the go ahead goal. So if it's the go ahead goal, then maybe you're a little more willing to run the risk. But no, I thought it was good process. I thought it was the wise call from Rick Tocchet and the staff, and of course including the video coach Dylan Crawford. Let's get to our top story, brought to you by Mr. Lube. Opportunity lost, and now it's nervous time. Blake, how nervous are you for them in game 6? How nervous would you be for them if it's coming back here for a game 7 Sunday?
I mean, as we just saw with the Preds, I think you can overcome the nerves and knowing that your back is against the wall. I mean, we just saw the Nashville Predators had their backs against the wall and they were ever able to push that aside and play a very good road hockey game. So I think they can park that and still be the better team. They are the ones that can win the series in game number 6 on Friday. The Predators cannot.
House money. And I almost feel better about their chances Friday on the road than I do in game 7 at home. But perhaps that's just because I'm fixated on Canucks luck and nothing ever going easy for this franchise.
Top story brought to you by Mr. Lube. You need a tire change or tire service? Mr. Lube provides no appointment tire service and sales. Drop by anytime for tire rotation, repair, balancing, servicing all makes and models, including electric vehicles. 16 locations in the lower mainland for one near you. You go to MrLube.com.
It was a terrific first period for the Vancouver Canucks, but alas, no goals, no lead. And so an opponent that you pretty much dominated in period 1 hangs around and finds their game, and talked about it, that things started to break down in the second period for them. Let's hear from the head coach on the need to play harder here and on that second Nashville goal.
I think there's some moments there in the third where you just got to dig in. Even on that second goal, we had three or four opportunities to either box out or win an edge battle in the off the draw, or, you know, it was a weak side rim, get that puck before the ice. You got to dig in. There's just sometimes you just might have to get a punch in the mouth just to get a puck out. I think that's our next thing. You got to be. I just felt there's three or four mistakes on that shift before the goal. I didn't think we digged in hard enough on that, and they end up scoring the goal.
Yeah, and that's our next thing. Gosh, you really hope that lesson is learned here in the 2 days off before game six. Because if that lesson isn't learned, that could be a first-round Stanley Cup playoff exit for the Vancouver Canucks.
And yet I can see, if the Canucks eliminate them in game number six, I could see Andrew Brunette saying all the exact same things. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because no one's playing the pants off the other team. You know, like, the Predators aren't getting many good looks at all. Like, Artur Shilovs was not in trouble. You know, how many spectacular saves did he make outside of the goals that were scored? Like three others, maybe? Yeah. Like three other really, really amazing saves?
I was going to say two. I mean, Certainly the glove save on McDonough in the first period.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Andrew Brunette would love a few more scoring chances for his team. I think he'd love his team to dig in. It's a bit of a chess match out there right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, not being an NHL coach, how you break through this veneer here. Like, I really don't. I don't know how either team is going to bust this game. I had small hope at the Zadorov goal. The next couple of shifts were pretty promising for the Vancouver mm-hmm. Canucks. And I thought, you know what? Are we about to see a 4-0 game or one game? Like, did they just figure this out?
Nashville spirit already waning after losing game four in the manner they did. Then they give up the first goal. Of course, the Canucks have been so good when scoring the first goal this year. You're right. They were buzzing, and you think, okay, we've got them where we want them. And
just couldn't get the other one.
Put them away.
Couldn't get that second one.
And in part, that's because the power play once again. I mean, it's just sucking life out of the team. You can see it visibly. They get on a power play. They do absolutely nothing, and it affects them. 0 for 2 last night, 2 for 13 on the series, and JT Miller taking this one pretty hard. Here's the Canucks centerman on what's going wrong with the man advantage.
Our power play was awful. We need to take a look in the mirror as a group here. It can't just be every other game decided to play well. So we could have been a factor in the game, and we weren't, but I don't know. There's a lot of emotion in the game, and they were resilient. So, you know, it's hard to close teams out.
And give Nashville credit. They have done an extraordinary job of suppressing shots on goal by the Vancouver Canucks in this series. The Canucks have 91 shots through five games. They're averaging 8.2 shots per game. It is nearly six shots per game fewer than the next worst team in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it is a full 10 shots per game off their seasonal average of 28.4. Look, the Skaters have done a good job on the defensive side of things for the Nashville Predators. And then UC Soros entered the chat last night, Blake. And really, for all his accolades, he had been very ordinary, if that, in the first four games of the series. I think one of the concerns you have going to Nashville now is that their all-star goaltender is feeling it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they still will fall back onto the fact that they just aren't getting enough rubber on said goaltender. I mean, the goal that they score is a bad goal. That's the worst of the three goals. The three goals in the game, Saros gives up the worst one. So I think they still see a crack that they can infiltrate. To me, their biggest quandary is probably we just need to make him be tested more, because, you know, they're missing enough shots that should be on goal. There's enough scoring chances where they can't even pull the trigger on a shot, period. I mean, the Canucks' scoring chances are far outweigh their actual shots on goal. So they've got to make sure that their chances, when they're given them, are testing UC Saros. like 13 high danger chances credited to them at 5-on-5 in that game. How many of those were actually shots on goal? How many are user error high dangers that are missed? You've got to make UC Saros work for his paycheck here. And through five games, I don't know that they necessarily have. And that's too bad, given his save percentage. I think he looks very human. I think he looks like a good goaltender. I don't think he's had to be a great one. I really don't.
But that's what I'm worried about, that you give UC Saros enough games, he's going to paint a Mona Lisa in one of them. And I wonder if one of those is coming here, either on Friday or potentially a game seven, if necessary, on Sunday back here.
I mean, I think of Elias Pettersson coming down on that 2-on-1, which I thought he did really well to help create. And thank God he did what he did, Matt. He did not pass the puck.
Mm-hmm.
He shot. And
did he ever load up the shot as well? That was quite a big release. And I wonder whether that's because not everything is...
It's not natural
right now. With him.
It's just not natural. He's overthinking everything. Mm-hmm. Glad he took the shot. I think him at his best, that is in the top corner without a doubt.
Because
there was space there.
Hockey Stat Cards had him as the best forward for the Canucks last night by the analytics.
He was active. We noticed him. I mean, that's great. Still no bottom line. No. Super concerning. But thank God he was I said this going in. I would take a game two performance. Remember I said that yesterday? It's like, at least, even though completely snake bitten, blocked, all those shots were blocked, at least we noticed him in game two. And I
missing
think,
open nets.
Yeah. That was sort of a milder version in game five of what game two was for him. He was involved. He was noticeable. Still not vintage Pettersson, obviously.
Well, let me ask you again. Is it time for Lotto Line? We saw more of it last night. Is it time for Lotto Line fully, or
I'm willing to entertain that thought at this point. Yeah. Okay. I'm willing to start the game as Lotto Line. And if you have a ton of success, you could go back to spreading the wealth to maintain leads and stuff. But to make sure that you get out in front and maybe even try to get a multi-goal lead, dare to dream.
Or at the very least, tell Andrew Brunette we're coming with our best here.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to do in terms of match, you know, bring it. Because we're loading up our best line, and then we're coming with Lindholm, Bluger, and Joshua, who I thought were better last night after a mostly quiet games two through.
What that does is it creates,
notwithstanding the overtime winner,
it creates a very toothless fourth line.
Indeed.
Of Suter, Mikheyev. Well,
but Blake, it's already toothless. It's already toothless. I mean, they knew they needed another winger. They tried to get another winger. Gensel was too expensive. Even looked at Zucker, decided against it.
Did you see Tyler Toffoli's goal last night for the Jets, who were eliminated? But, I mean, Tyler Toffoli just rips a puck. I mean,
so, you know, you knew you were short a winger. Here we are, five games in. Nils Höglander, 0 points. Ilya Mikheyev was much better last night, 0 points. Pia Suter, 1 point. Sam Lafferty, 0 points. Phil DiGiuseppe, 1 point. And you don't have anyone else you can go to either. That's the other thing. You know, that's the other thing that we wondered about at the trade deadline when no depth was brought in. Went, oh, okay. So your 13th forward is, we thought it might be DiGiuseppe at the time, but it's turned out to be, well, it's not even Vasily Podkolzin, because Tocchet is talking about him going back to the Abbotsford Canucks for their second round AHL Calder Cup playoff series against Ontario, just so he can get some playing time. So they are quite thin in the forward ranks, particularly on the wing.
Suter hit another post last night.
Like, yeah, he sure did.
He's got 2 posts in the series, I think, at least.
Like, yeah, I think so.
Like,
he's been snake bitten.
Yeah, he sure has.
And he's got a bear.
No, but here's
like, grade A chances too.
Here's the thing. He's not too dissimilar to Mikheyev.
No.
They just don't have the hands to finish at a high rate. And that's what makes them middle or bottom six forwards.
And we're starting to see why Suter languished in the free agent pool, given his career stats are very good. I think they see that, yeah, you get something out of them, but when you need them the most, maybe you're not.
Mm-hmm.
If they're your fourth line wingers, I think you're okay with that.
And what happens
when you try to promote them?
To the Sam Lafferty we saw early on in the season.
Yeah, or even like early on, earlier in the series. I thought Lafferty was decent in game
speed,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a snippet last night of that.
Guys, I think you see players that are feeling the nerves. You know, like you're when you're not a top line player that's used to have, you know, and at any level, the true top players in the Vancouver Canucks at their junior level, maybe elsewhere in the NHL, they've had responsibility heaped on them. They know what that feels like. A guy like Sam Lafferty, he's maybe playing out there to not screw up. And that's a tough place to play when you're playing in the I hope I don't screw this up mode. So, but truth of the matter is there is no white knight from the bottom six that's going to come up and help Elias Pettersson.
No,
you know and that's why the lotto line might be the way to go, because at least Elias Pettersson's playing with guys that are thinking on his level, have his skill level, and maybe that's the best way to use him at this point.
There's no X factor coming down from the press box.
There's no X factor on this team, period. I don't think they're getting unsuspecting contributions from anybody outside of maybe Nikita Zadorov.
Been teasing Blake about Vasilias's X factor going into this series. Now, granted, mine is doing nothing as well.
That's right.
Filip Hronek. Zadorov is the X factor, right?
I guess.
I think we got to give it to Big Z. He's got two of their four even strength goals in the last four games.
For sure. But I thought Zadorov was boom or bust in the playoffs. He was either going to be super
boom,
costly.
A lot of
but
boom.
He's been boom. He's
a lot
been
of boom.
I don't love his penalty, but for the most part, it's boom.
Good boom. Here's Rick talking on Big Boom.
Hell of a goal. I think he's played well every game. You know, he's got a lot of passion. You know, you can tell he's played playoff games before, and he wants to be a difference maker.
He sure does have passion. And I got to admit, I'm a little bit worried about that passion vis-a-vis some of the comments he made about officiating last night. And particularly the Dakota Joshua hit on Luke Evangelista of the Nashville Predators. Incidentally, did you see the tweet Murph had that Evangelista grew up as a Leafs fan and his first jersey was a Luke Shen jersey? And there's pictures of him running around in a Luke Shen jersey. And now they're teammates. And hey, Shen came out for victorious Tyson Berry last night. That was kind of a ballsy move.
Fabro there too. Yeah. They brought all
the BC. Yeah, a lot of BC.
Lock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shen sick, by the way. So he might draw back in. We'll see.
Yes. Yeah. Here's Big Z on the officiating and specifically Evangelista making himself vulnerable for that Joshua boarding penalty.
It's the NHL playoffs. Every person on the ice should be sharp, not just the players. I don't know what Dakota's supposed to do. He's back checking, finish the guy. The kid's been dodging the hits for five games straight. Bad income will happen. You got to protect yourself. It's a men's league. Trying to find the worst so don't get fined $25,000 here, but it's everybody saw it, I think. Like I said, it's obviously the players responsible for what they do on the ice, but also there's a few other people on the ice. They have to be responsible for it too. And it's a Stanley Cup playoffs. It can happen.
I would like to think or hope that he stopped just short of the line with NHL referees. But you may remember the barrage of penalties that the Vancouver Canucks were assessed in the games following Tyler Myers' harsh criticism of NHL referees. I believe it was the Winnipeg game, Grady, in March.
Yes.
The one where Demko left and Myers said something along the lines of felt like we were playing two teams out there, something like that.
Yep.
We know how these NHL officials operate.
Very thin
the
skin.
Egos are massive. Yep. The skin is thin. And they protect the fraternity as well. We've also come to see.
And I don't love the parallel of Stefan Ogier as well. That, of course, trailed back to a game versus Nashville.
Right.
Burroughs was embarrassing him in Nashville.
I think Zadorov stopped short of crossing the line. I think that there is a line with this group of officials is despicable. They just, it's not too different in this business. You know, when young people get in this business, oh my God, you know, all these comments, the inbox, the Twitter, blah, blah, blah. you got two choices. Read them and ignore, or don't listen. I would like to think that the NHL officials could rise to that standard. You know, ignore the noise, call the game, call the rule book, not interpretations thereof. Again, it's not a suggestion manual. It is a rule book. Ferraro used to always say, you know, we call the rules for 82 games, then we get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and for some reason, standard shape. I would like to think all of that works and works as it should in game six.
Matt, considering a baseball umpire just threw out a manager who didn't say anything, it tells you how.
Well, that's what I'm worried about, Blake.
Incidentally, we do.
That Zadorov breathes on someone in game six and gets two because they heard what he said and they're evening up the score.
We do mock the NHL fines sometimes. You heard there. He didn't want to write a check for 25 grand. Yeah, they might make millions per year, but they got, you know, 25 grand's a lot of dough.
Yeah. And also, I mean, mention this on the postgame pod. You know, Elliot Friedman's in the second intermission and just says, matter of factly, well, if you're Vancouver, you have to expect that you're going to get called for a penalty because.
How bad is that?
The follow through from. Was it Suter?
Yeah.
Into the face of, was it Barry? Which could have been a high sticking.
But again, if we're calling it by the rules, right. That is that in the rules, there's a carve out for that very, very thing.
So anyways, we'll see who the officials are. And, you know, for the most part, I haven't had a lot of criticism of the officiating in this series.
Nope.
In fact, I think it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think it's walked a, I think it's walked a fair line between letting them play and calling what needs to be called. The other thing I'll say, of course, two different referees each and every. I think the standard from game one through game five has been pretty consistent as well.
The glaring one I saw last night was a haul down of Pettersson along the end boards there in the.
Well, I thought the
third
first,
period,
yeah.
He's hauled down. I mean, a no call. It was right when the fans were up in arms, too.
Yes, I saw that as well.
Yeah,
I thought the first Miller penalty, the hook on Carrier.
Well, that's a hook.
Yeah?
That's a hook. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a silly one, too. He's got another teammate with him.
Thought it was a smidge soft.
He's got a teammate with him. There's no need for him to get his stick up there. It was silly.
Anyways, we'll see. Well, and the Zadorov penalty you have to call. Right. And then
he had words for Forsberg going to the, was it Forsberg he crossed checks?
Yes.
He had some words for you. Yeah. You could read lips pretty easily with.
Well,
I thought in the box,
I thought Forsberg sold it. No doubt. But two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Penalty was sold. It was also a needless cross check that you're just asking for trouble.
Also,
when you do that.
At his size, lay a shoulder into his back. You're probably not going to get an interference penalty if you're just kind of boxing up the guy with your shoulder a little bit. I'd be more likely to endorse that than the minute that stick goes horizontal, you're probably going to go to the box.
Yeah. No, that's kind of how it operates in the NHL. Wanted to get to this from J-Pat. We talked about the lack of scoring from the wingers. So many ways to look at the reason the Canucks are struggling to score. Most felt winger depth was an issue. Of the season. Now the last four games, Brock Besser is the only Canucks winger to put a puck in the net. He has four of the team's last eight goals. Of course, JT Miller, Elias Lindholm, the game winner, and Nikita Zadorov with two.
Probably should have had one more other last night too.
Goal scorers. Yes, absolutely. Good news today for Vancouver Canucks captain Quinn Hughes. He is one of the three finalists for the James Norris Trophy awarded to the league's best defenseman. He is joined by Roman Josi, Nashville Predators defenseman. So you got two of the three Norris finalists in this series. And of course, the sublime Cale Makar of the Colorado Avalanche, which did you see his end-to-end goal the other night?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the hit he took last. I thought he was going to have cardiac arrest on the ice last night. He was hit so hard. He was struggling so badly on the bench. I honestly thought he'd have to leave the game. He was pasted.
He's got some time here.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Especially with Dallas and Vegas tied at 2-2. But you saw the Bobby Orr-esque goal the other night? Good God. Incredible. I mean, there are very few defensemen in the history of the league who can score that goal.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's going to be close. Our Frank Saravelli and others think Hughes is going to win it. He outpointed McCarr. The Canucks won their division. We're right there at the top of the standings all season long.
McCarr's stats greatly lean on his presence on the ice with Nathan MacKinnon. Hughes is not as stapled to good performance with
and Hughes' else. Defensive metrics were excellent this year as well. So we think he's going to win. But of course, McCarr has the reputation. And I mean, let's face it. If you're building a team tomorrow and you can take any defenseman in the league, I think most people are picking Cale Makar first. So Hughes has a couple of things to overcome here, but I suspect he is going to lift the James Norris Trophy and be the first Vancouver Canucks defenseman.
But there's weird things. They also get sentiments like this of, I think Makar is going to win a lot of Norris's. This was a great season by Hughes.
Yep,
this is a good time for us to give it to somebody else because Makar is going to win more.
Right. Fair. I often felt NBA voters did that with the MVP and Michael Jordan. You know, Barkley had a great year in Phoenix. Yeah. Really, got in shape, shot the three-pointer. You know, Malone, Utah were so good front to back this year.
He got bored of MJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic. Look what he did for the Lakers this year. I think there were three MVPs that should have been Jordan that wound up being Malone, probably. Magic, and Barkley because of that voter fatigue. I kid you about Bud Colson, but is it the right move sending him to Abbey for this second round series against the Ontario Reign? It begins tonight. That's tonight.
Begins tonight.
Right. Yeah. In Ontario. Game three is back here in Abbotsford, but the first three are down in California. Is it the right move just to get him some ice time here? He hasn't played since the final week.
I'm of two minds of it. I mean, certainly he has to play. I mean, I would be tempted, given the winger thing, to slot him into game six in Nashville. So, if he's dead set, and it does seem like talk is dead set against using him, just too young, too green to play in the series. So if you're not planning on using him, I guess he's not using him, then absolutely that's the right play. But I wonder if it would be helpful to get an exuberant big body out on the road. And this has nothing to do with my freaking X Factor choice.
Still won't take the L.
Well, it's not an L. It's a separate conversation.
Well, it's not a W. Not a T.
Well, we don't know if he can't play. Put him in the damn lineup. What are you losing? You're not losing anything.
You're losing DiGiuseppe's penalty killing.
If it's DiGiuseppe, we'll take out Lafferty.
Penalty killing was...
take out Lafferty.
Yeah.
You know, like, are these guys still great in the lineup? Or we just
Lafferty's
just,
the right shot. He's got the speed. He can play
Russians,
the middle.
Russians love to play off the off wing. But on the
right side. Right. Where do the Winnipeg Jets go from here? They're out in five games to the Colorado Avalanche.
Hemorrhaged goals.
And the best goals. Defensive team in the regular season gives up 28 in five games. The all-world Vezina Trophy winning goaltender Connor Hellebuck, because he is going to win the Vezina over Thatcher Demko, gets absolutely ventilated, not for the first time in the postseason, albeit for the first time after signing that big long extension with the Jets, who doubled down last summer on their current construction of the team, even with Rick Bonus criticizing the group at the end of last season. You remember how harsh Bonus was on this group. But Mark Scheifele's $8.5 million extension kicks in next season. Connor Hellebuck's $8.5 million extension kicks in next year. Hellebuck is 30. Scheifele is 31. There was talk heading into last offseason that the Jets may trade one or both of them because could they afford them? Did they want to stay? Did Winnipeg just have to change up the group and the composition of its roster? So I ask you, where do the Winnipeg Jets go next? The other thing, trading the assets out for Monahan and Toffoli, Blake, it gets you five games. I mean, that is
always the risk. That's why guys don't take out their wallet at the deadline.
That is the scary tale of every deadline, right? Who's going to load on up only to watch the team flame out?
Every year there's a scary one or two series that leads you to believe, like, what are we doing this for 82 games for anyway? Boston, you know, sets the league on fire last year. Boom, they're out. At Jay Fresh Hockey on Twitter, goodbye to the Winnipeg Jets, a balanced offensive team. So they weren't. They played elite team defense.
till it fell apart.
Until they didn't. And was backstopped by elite goaltending until it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like everything you knew the Jets to be disappeared.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Earlier in my career, I covered some of these series back east with some terrific teams. Ottawa Senators teams that would go into the Stanley Cup playoffs and then play completely out of character and lose to a lesser seed.
I can see teams that are flashy offensively. That doesn't track in the playoffs right. Well. Because when you are balanced,
Washington once upon a time, right?
But this Jets team had it all buttoned down.
Right.
Good defense, good goaltending. Like, what are we seeing in the playoffs? Yeah. Like, shut them down. That's how you win. They just couldn't. Like, so in that regard, Matt, I don't know what you do. Do you try to run it back one more year and reproduce?
I mean, in some cases, so you're going to have to do some further construction on your blue line because you got three UFAs there. And in fact, Brendan Dillon has been a guy who has been mentioned as a potential Vancouver Canuck, a New West native. He's one of the three UFA defensemen. For the most part, you look at their team and, you know, I could make a case for running it back. They got $74 million committed. So they got a little bit of money to play with. They don't particularly have, I mean, Perfetti's an RFA, but not with Arbrights. So you're not looking at any super expensive RFA that you have to deal with. You're going to need to, you know, round out your defense, backup goaltender. If you're not bringing Brassois back, I wouldn't suspect that Toffoli or Monahan are back. You have been a exceptional draft and develop team. You're without first and third round picks this year because of the trades. You're without a second round pick next year, second and fourth next year because of the trades. But I would think that Chevalier feels good about his staff's ability to find some players here over the next couple of drafts.
Further development of Perfetti and yep. Some others and, too.
Yeah, the further upside that they have. And guys like Perfetti, I think Vilardi may have more than what we've seen as well. Kupari, there's some others on that team that could improve. But boy, for a team that I thought, and I picked Winnipeg in five, dominated Colorado in the regular season. Great depth up front after the trades for Toffoli and Monahan. You know, Morrissey, and then, it's kind of Morrissey and a cast of misfit toys on defense. But, you know, there's some good players there as well.
But a great warning about regular season record, too. They demolished the Avs in the regular season and then couldn't do anything to them in this playoff run. So if the Canucks get past the Preds and face the Oilers, I don't want to hear about the 4-0 regular season record against the Oilers.
Oh, you're going to hear about it.
Well, it means nothing. It means zero.
Well, you can have that take, but you're going to hear about it.
From who?
Well, from this guy.
Okay. All right.
Hockey Heads, the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge is here. Each game day, answer four questions, pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, choose the high scoring period. Daily winners, gift cards. Round winners, cash. Play now. Games.dailyfaceoff.com. Incidentally, the Vancouver Canucks travel day, no practice, and Rick Tocchet availability at 7 p.m. Central Time. That's a group that just wanted to get out of town and answer no more questions about game five.
Yeah. And get a
I'm not sure how many people are going to be there for the 7 p.m. availability in Nashville.
In some ways, Matt, it's actually
almost like a full team day off, including media.
But it's courteous because it does give the media time to get to Nashville.
Well,
in some ways, it's courteous.
And in other ways, courteous would have been media availability here and then fly out. But I don't think they wanted to do that.
That's another stop on the way to the airport, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
I don't mind that. I honestly don't mind that.
Let's get to today's menu. It is brought to you by Ben Moss Jewelers. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated with a history dating back more than 100 years, five locations in British Columbia, including Willowbrook and Coquitlam Centre. Committed to customer satisfaction, you can check out the large selection of Canadian mine diamonds, lab-grown diamonds. These mine diamonds are available with payment plans to suit your needs. For more information, check out benmoss.com. Ben Moss. For the love of jewelry. We talked to Frank Corrado coming up here on, many of the relevant topics, his thoughts on game two or sorry, game five between the Predators and the Canucks. Quinn Hughes and how he's managing through what many suspect is an injury. The goaltending starter for game six. Of course, that becomes a question here again.
Yep.
Or is it cut and dry for you, Sheloves?
It's pretty cut and dry for me, Sheloves.
Yes, it is for me too. Goalie guy Grady, Sheloves, without a doubt, without a flinch.
Yeah.
Okay. Shots on goal, power play, Mikheyev, lots of topics to cover here with Frank Corrado. And Frank Saravelli joins us in the Nation Network studio, NHL insider from the Daily Faceoff and the Frankly Speaking podcast. He is rolling with the Vancouver Canucks. He has chosen to cover the Vancouver Canucks of all the series that are out there, a national guy. He's chosen to cover the Canucks. And he tells us if they make it through, he's going to ride with them.
Casey DeSmith update
to the second round. Yes. Yeah. Casey DeSmith update. He tells you what he believes the injury is and where Casey DeSmith is at with that injury. All right, buddy. It is time for our Bet 365 bet of the day. And this segment brought to you by Bet 365, proud partner of Securison Price. Beginning of the playoffs a few days before, our buddy Steve Ewan from the province messaged me. He says, Matt, give me a sleeper fantasy hockey guy, playoff pool guy in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I said, Steve, I'm not sure if Wyatt Johnson qualifies as a sleeper. But given that he's often the number three center for Dallas, I think he's going to get pretty favorable matchups. And he's a pretty good goal scorer. He's got pretty good wingers there because the Dallas talent offensively. And the big centerman, 4 points through four games. He's been a story as the Stars have clawed back into that series, winning both games in Dallas. They're back at home. Could continue to get some of those favorable matchups, not to mention last change. Going to take a bigger swing here. Wyatt Johnson to score 2 points game five Wednesday, paying a plus 340 on the money line.
Going to Connor McDavid points in their game.
Okay, that's cheating.
Versus the LA Kings.
Hey, tell me it's three.
It's three.
Well, they only scored one the last game, so.
It's a day that ends in Y. McDavid will get 3 points. Plus 215 on Connor McDavid.
3 points is only plus 215?
It's Connor McDavid. Literally. Before breakfast.
Open an account with Bet365 today and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code VANBONUS altogether, all one word. Frank Corrado, coming up next. Our next guest brought to you by the Arnold Palmer Design Whistler Golf Club. Counting down to opening day, May 10th. We are inside of 10 days here. And the club reminds organizers of groups of 12 or more, it's time to lock in those times for the 2024 season. The prime times are filling up fast, so if you don't want to reserve that spot, and just for doing so, you, the organizer, plays for free. Whistler Golf Club takes care of the rest. Tell us about your group, whistlergolf.com/groups. And, of course, check out the spring preparations, the Bears, the course wintered famously. I'm wearing my Whistler Golf quarter zip. Check the social out at Whistler Golf.
My son had a pow day the other day at the top, and then we're talking like days away from Whistler right. Golf Club.
Amazing. Day. Here he is, former Vancouver Canuck TSN hockey analyst Frank Corrado, who was spending some time with our boy Farhan Walshy.
Yeah. Yesterday.
That was a
pleasant surprise last night. Farhan coming up to the boardroom at TSN Studio 9 to watch the end of the Canucks game after doing the CFL draft. So very talented guy, that Farhan Lalji. I think he actually got back for his son's track meet today.
Really?
Yeah, he
did he travel well.
Did he ever interview you as a Canuck?
Yes, I have a Farhan story.
Please bring it.
Safe for work? Do tell.
Yeah. Actually, I had a little beef with Farhan early on in my TSN, Canucks tenure, but I don't even know if he knows this. So when I first got called up to play my first NHL game, long story short, there was a Russian player in Sudbury. His name was Andrei Kuchin, and he didn't use a cell phone or anything like that. So his agent, his North American agent, used to communicate to him through me because I lived like three doors down from the kid, right? So this guy, he was based in Chicago. And so all year, like I'd help, you know, facilitate all this stuff. And I was playing for the Wolves. So, you know, as a little thank you, he takes me out for dinner. And, you know, like then he texts me afterwards. He goes, okay, I'll see you at the game. I'm going to come, you know, I'm going to watch the game, whatever. I go, actually, I just got called up to Vancouver. So, you know, I won't see you tomorrow. And he went out and he tweeted something like, you know, good things happen to good people. Congrats to at Frank Cradle 22, like getting called up to the Vancouver Canucks. And I guess Farhan saw that that's an agent. That's a hockey agent. And tweeted, oh, this is from Frank Corrado's agent. I guess he's getting called up. And I had to like throw a tweet out there right away. I'm like, this is not my agent. My agent is Joe Resnick. Because you can understand my situation. Like I have a, yeah. I have an agent. He's like, what is going on? Like you have a double agent? What is this? So anyways, we cleared the air, but it was a little moment of trepidation.
Bad before my first
NHL recall. Yeah. And yeah, Farhan thought he was getting the scoop, but he jammed me up a little bit. But it's all good now.
Did Mr. Resnick?
I was going to say, was Resnick shook?
He called me. He was like, "What is going on? Is there something I need to know?"
And, yeah, exactly.
Of course, I had to explain that situation, which was fun. Yeah.
What did you make of Game 5, Frank?
Man, like other games in this series, it could have gone either way. Like the goaltending is still a story for a number of reasons, whether it's the injuries or the, you know, the third string goalie playing well, Saros making some massive saves. It's a tight series. And what seems like it might be, you know, low event at times, every once in a while, there's a grade A and you're like, whoa, like that kind of, you know, that came out of nowhere and it happened quick. But it's the margins for error right now in this series are very slim. And you can lose a game and not necessarily deserve to lose that game. And that's what makes this series so difficult right now. And, you know, the one thing that maybe you want to look from the Canucks is like, where's the game breakers? Like, where's that? Like, because that's what's really got to put you over the edge here in a series like this. You know, you have them. You know, you've seen it at times this year. There's some elite skill. Like, there's more elite skill on Vancouver than there is on Nashville. But the game is kind of in this like murky, swampy middle right now where it just seems like it's really hard to kind of break through and get the upper hand for a long time.
Frank, we have a story right there. Pettersson on the 2-on-1 could extend the lead. It is on a tee for Elias Pettersson to erase all the bad karma, all the bad press that he's been getting. And it just catches the left shoulder of Saros. It was right there for him. I mean, honestly, the series is won if that goal goes in.
And you know what? I think for Pettersson, watching him last night, it's definitely not for a lack of effort. Like we've seen that throughout the series. It's almost like he's trying to do too much. But, you know, even early in that game, you know, he goes to throw a big hit on Carrier. Like he takes the worst of it, but he's involved. He's engaged physically. Like he wants to do it. We're starting to see more signs of maybe he's going to be able to do it. But with the Miller line having been so consistent, and basically been like the one constant that you can count on throughout this series, outside of, you know, like Quinn Hughes has been like big moments have followed Quinn Hughes in this series, but like that Miller line's been really good. But you do need a little bit more. And I know like you can just tell he wants to do a little bit more. It looks like it's coming and maybe it comes at the right time. Like maybe it happens on the road, but you know, I always found with whether it was myself or other guys, whether you're in a little bit of a rut or a tough spot, it can be a little bit of one step forward, two steps back. Like it doesn't just happen right away. And you can see he's trying to work through something, but I don't know. I felt like he was engaged in the games, especially physically last night.
Does he look injured to you? And specifically, does it look like a hand or wrist injury based on the way he is shooting?
Hughes or Pettersson?
Pettersson.
I always wonder about that with him because like when a player is that good, that refined in their skill set, and then they can't really put it together, you have to start to wonder, okay, is there something, you know, nagging this guy? I don't know like if I feel like it's the wrist, because I watched one of the hits last night and I'm like, okay, why are you going down so easy there? Like you had the upper hand. It felt like, I don't know. I don't know why I felt like it wasn't necessarily the wrist. And I feel like that's the one we always come back to. But, you know, maybe at times it has been a groin. I don't know. It's hard to tell because even the way he skates, You know, he's a good skater, but it's not exactly the prettiest stride you've ever seen.
I thought he looked faster last night, though. I thought last night I noticed him break away on that 2-on-1 and separate a little bit.
Yeah, which is good. Like that, and that's the thing. Like when he kind of slows down to a crawl, he's regular, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and for me, it's not necessarily the high end speed. It's the shiftiness, like the evasiveness. That's where you see it. It's like that quick, fast twitch, explosive movement. And when he doesn't have that, you know, he's kind of just another guy. But you know, when he has that, he's able to create some separation. So that's one of the things that I'd kind of be looking for in the next game, and well, hopefully not two games.
And I mean, Lindholm's wrist is still bandaged up and he's playing.
Yeah.
Great.
Hey, so. They targeted, in Rick Tocchet's words, took runs at Quinn Hughes. I think it was a little gentler, the treatment last night, but how do you think he's going to hold up here now that we're going back to Nashville and playing at least six?
I give him a lot of credit, man, and he's not wrong, because they have been taking runs at him. But like, is that a secret? Is that a surprise? The guy's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. He's probably going to win the Norris. You don't think that was one of the first things that was said in every pre-scout meeting that they had leading up to this series? Like, hit Hughes every single chance you have. And the way he's been able to bounce back, and you know, I go back two games ago, like the plays that he made late in that game, you know, under pressure at the offensive blue line, like incredible stuff to be able to do that and have that kind of poise under pressure, especially with the fact that, you know, every time you've had the puck, essentially, someone's been coming to finish you, and you could get, like, you could start to hear the footsteps. I know I did when I played. I'm obviously not the player that Quinn Hughes was, but you know, the footsteps start, they start to get a little louder. And for him, it's almost like he hears the footsteps and he's like, I'm going to play through it. Like, I think he's a very resilient guy. And quite honestly, he probably has had to be for a long, long time. Like, he probably has never been the biggest guy. Like, he's never been the strongest guy. He's always had to push through this. You know, it's not the first time that a team has said, let's finish our hits on Quinn Hughes every chance we have, because that's going to be the game plan on him forever. And it is for every top defenseman. But, you know, even like anytime he gets the puck at the blue line, he still looks like he's got that shake and bake and he's dancing. And it's like, he's not dumbing it down for the sake of dumbing it down. He's still playing his game. And I think, you know, what really sticks out to me is, as much as he's always, you know, he has that flash, he does what the game requires. And I think that really goes a long way for his game and facilitating the rest of the team's game.
It's maybe too much to ask both special teams to be going like gangbusters at the same time, but the PK, I mean, they're making it look easy at times, and they finally do succumb and let in a goal, but the power play looks like they've never met each other in their entire lives.
But it's so strange. It's so, like, they just had power play goals. Like, JT Miller just had one, and it seemed like it was such an easy recipe, too, where you didn't have to overcook the puck. You know, like, it was just, hey, let's roll it up on the half wall. Let's skate downhill. Let's take a shot. If it doesn't work, it gets blocked. Let's do it again, because maybe we're going to create a rebound. Maybe we're going to create a little opportunity at the net. Like, Brock Besser's done a really good job all year, not just in the playoffs, but like being in that net front area, kind of sneaking in behind coverage, establishing body positioning. It's like, you know, those little plays, those need to happen off shots and puck retrievals where you get people moving. Like, you can't just, it's hard to just direct a puck down there and say, now we're going to make small little plays around the net. Like, you need to open up some kind of coverage in that situation. But I don't know. I think when it comes to the power play, it comes down to, like, let's get back to the basics. But they've been back to the basics so many times. Like,
but it's like they fall in love with one thing.
They have to get basicer.
How can it be more basic than what they did in Nashville, where it was like JT Miller shot blocked?
They fall in love with one thing, and then they just do that,
right?
And there's never middle ground. Like, it's just Elias Pettersson. Okay, it's just JT Miller shooting now. Yeah. It's just slap passing now. It's just Bo Horvat in the bummer. Like, it's always just one thing. Like, how about, you know, you do a little bit of everything here, and
I'll give you a good example. Like, okay, so for me this year, covering Montreal a lot, I think a lot of people made a lot of Cole Caulfield not scoring, right? And Marty St. Louis talked about it. He said, and the power play was struggling as well. So you got the daily double there. And basically Marty said, well, listen, the power play doesn't revolve around Cole Caulfield. The power play revolves around all five players and having different looks. Now, Montreal's power play was not good. Cole Caulfield, you know, he was he didn't have the season that maybe people expected. It was respectable at the end of it all. But I think the messaging there from a coach who played the game is very correct, that the power play can't just have one look. It can't just revolve around one guy. It has to have a few different things. Like, I would love to see the bumper. Like, I would love to see that bumper one-timer a little bit more. I would love to see, you know, things open up through the seam. I like the Quinn Hughes one-timer. Like, I want to see all these different elements, but if you're going to get hamstrung to one thing, you know, teams are going to sniff it out. I think, you know, Nashville does a really good job of blocking shots to begin with. And if they kind of know that there's going to be, you know, one set play, or, you know, where everything's going to get worked off, they're coming straight out. Like, they will come straight out onto the half walls and make themselves look big. But I think when that happens, that's when you open yourself up to plays low underneath that. But it does start with a shot mentality first.
I might have asked you this last week, but 21, 18, 12, 20, 20. Shot totals for the Vancouver Canucks through five games by game. 91 through five, averaging 18 shots per game. Can they win this series with so few shots on goal?
They can, because they've gotten this far, you know, and they're essentially on the brink of it. It's just Nashville's a weird team. Like, the way they kind of suppress, you know, the quantity of chances is quite interesting. But I would say that just because the quantity of chances and shots hasn't been there, like, there has been quality. Like, you know, it's funny watching the game last night, Farhan walks into the room and he goes, okay, what's the story? And I'm like, okay, well, Saros has made some big saves. And he goes, well, how can that be the case? There's only 12 shots for the Canucks at this point. I'm like, well, I'm telling you, man, he's made some key saves. And then shortly afterwards, Zadorov scores. And you know, that's one that Saros is kind of swimming in his own net. But you know, I think if you're still generating the quality, if you're still generating the slot shots, if it's still, you know, goal mouth situations where you're jamming away at pucks, you don't need to waste them. Like, you don't need to waste them on Saros on the outside. Like, I don't think, you know, with a goalie like that, you know, you don't need to throw junk at the net and say, let's just go volume, volume, volume. Because I don't know, how many times have we seen really good goalies make 40 saves in a game? And it's like, okay, you made 40 saves. How many of those were of, you know, really good quality? So I do think they can do it. Of course, they would probably like to get a little more as far as quantity to the net. But as long as the quality is still there, I'm not necessarily concerned.
Yeah, they got scoring chances. They got more than enough scoring chances to win that hockey game and to score two, three, maybe even four goals. And it's just not, is that in their head at all, do you think, that, you know, that they can't score enough goals right now? I mean, it doesn't seem like it, but
it has to be. I think when you're in a series, you think of, okay, what do we need to do now in order to win this series? And like, scoring goals, obviously scoring goals, but like, it hasn't come easy to them. And I think that's where, like, you know, the star player kind of, you know, the star power game breaker type player really comes into play. And that's, you know, Elias Pettersson. And, you know, the power play obviously is a big part of that, but I don't know. Like, I think, you know, the goalie has a big part in that, because you'll take a look at the pre-scout before, you take a look at, you know, there's some video clips playing in the dressing room and you see all the saves or all the goals this guy's making, and you're like, man, it's tough to beat that guy. And I think it's become one of those things now where offense is not coming easy for this team. It's not coming easy for other teams around the league. Like, it's not just the Vancouver Canucks that are going through this. And like, this is one of the hurdles that happens in the playoffs. And they gotta find a way, because when they were at their best, as much as they're a very good defensive team, when they were at their best this year, the goals came a little easier, and you hope you didn't waste them all in the early portion of the season.
I want to challenge both of you on this notion of quality chances, or enough scoring chances, and it's the quality over the quantity. Guys, Saros has an 8.79 save percentage in this series. The Vancouver Canucks have two power play goals. They were both in the same game. They have four even strength goals in the last four games, two of them by Nikita Zadorov. If they're putting 10 more shots per night on goal, or 12, something that's closer to 28-30, which is roughly what you expect in an NHL game, you guys telling me one more ain't going in? And this series isn't over now, or they're in overtime last night?
Like, your chances. Like, yeah. I'd like your chances of one more going in for sure. But it's easier said than done to just fire 10 up when it's gone the way it has.
No,
it's not just a one game thing. That's you know, we've seen how hard it is for them to pepper the net. It's just it's not easy. Whether it's, you know, the game where Nashville blocks 35 shots or there's going to be games where Nashville carries the play offensively. It's harder. Like everyone's accounted for. Like every matchup is pretty dialed in, and the goaltender matchup is no different. But those numbers probably don't tell the whole story with Saros. Like those are very, very pedestrian numbers for a good goalie who, you know, had struggled this year, but really turned his game around towards the end.
And the thing I'd be worried about, Frank, is he was really pedestrian through four games. Like he was good last night. You might be now running into a good hot UC Saros, which would be pretty scary at the very least in game six, back on home ice, but potentially in a winner take all game seven as well. Let's go to the crease on the other end. What have you made of young Shilovs, and who would you start in game five?
I'd be going right back with the kid. I thought he was really good. You talk about stories in that game last night. Saros was a story, but I think the bigger story was Shilovs and how well he played, especially in the early parts of that game. You know, like Nashville was making a lot of plays from below the goal line up to the slot area. And those are tough for defensemen. I know firsthand, but they're tough for goalies too, because now you're constantly having to move your head like behind you to in front of you. You're checking, you know, certain sight lines. And I thought he handled that all really, really well. You know, for a young goalie, it seems like the moment is not too big for him. Regardless of what you think of that second goal, like there is some traffic in front of him. And I don't know. I like the way the team feels when he's in the net. Not to say that it's not the same when Casey DeSmith is in the net, and of course Thatcher Demko's in a different ballpark. But I think this guy, like he we've seen it at the men's worlds when Latvia won bronze. Like he likes the bigger moment, and his game doesn't make you feel like, you know, you're missing something when he's in there. I liked his game.
Hey Frank, did you hear him after game four when he was asked about whether he was nervous playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs? And he said he wasn't that nervous. He's had experience before, you know, back home in the domestic league.
The domestic league, the Latvian domestic league. Yeah, is that what he said?
Yeah, he said it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
You know why? You know why?
The domestic league before the world championships.
You know why he said that, right? Because there's a good chance in that league, if you don't play well, you're probably not getting paid.
Oh, yeah.
That's when the stakes are really high. The Latvian domestic league. We got to get eyes on this thing. I saw it. Like I was in Riga, so I got to see a little bit of it. That's awesome.
So you were in Riga. You're the one.
Okay. Penalties have not been a huge, like, it's not like the Canucks are handing seven power plays to the Preds on a nightly basis. It's just sometimes the timing of these power plays has just seemingly gutted the Canucks. And I don't know that I loved any of the penalties taken. Is that something they need to take head on? Or if you're giving up four power plays, that's just kind of standard and not worthy of addressing if you're Rick Tocchet.
Four power plays in the playoffs feels like it's on the higher end based on what we see. Yeah. We see in the other games, it's like, you know, last night, there's a game where there's like one power play for one team, three for the other, like four is high. But I don't know, Vancouver is playing a very hard, rugged style of game. Like they're, and you know what, I give them a lot of credit because they identified something with their decor that they wanted to do. They wanted the big tree stump defenseman who can move fairly well and can move the puck fairly well. And they've been like really mean, really punishing. And if everyone's going to play that style, you're going to be susceptible to a little more of the penalties. I saw what Zadorov said after the game about, you know, the officiating. And it's like, I don't think that's exclusive to this series. Like, I just think there's so much urgency with the way all these teams are playing right now. And, you know, guys are towing the line, and refs are going to miss things. Refs are going to call things. Like, there's been a ton of missed calls in other series as well. So it's going to be a point of focus to make sure you are disciplined and not give Nashville opportunities on the power play. But it's not just exclusive to here. One, you know what interests me about the Nashville power play? And I don't know if you guys noticed this. Roman Josi must be the only defenseman in the NHL who accepts the drop pass on the breakout instead of initiating the drop pass, which is wild. He's got to be the only one who someone else drops it to Josi, and then he's the one who carries it in. And of course he carries it right to the net. He ends up scoring that goal. But that was, that was one of my big takeaways. Like it has a different look because it's a defenseman, but he's pretty good at it.
I don't mind it. I mean, if Hughes was in that role, Hughes has got such good handle of the puck, him weaving into the offensive zone. To me, that's not a bad idea. I mean, who's better at holding onto the puck? I mean,
Yeah. Hughes could do it. He's definitely capable, but yeah, it's an interesting look they have.
Indeed. Ilya Mikheyev, your old Leaf teammate.
I missed him. I missed him by a couple of years, but I saw him a lot.
There.
No, I saw him a lot though.
He misses his old self too.
Is he ever going to score?
No kidding.
Is he?
That's a great question.
Because he was better last night, Frank. He was active. He was in the mix.
Yeah. Not the first time we said that either. There was games in the final 10 where he was very active. Still nothing. Yeah.
I know. This is the thing that frustrated everyone in Toronto. It's like this guy, because of his speed, because of his willingness to kind of drive the net and take pucks wide and bring it right across the middle of the ice, like he's very willing to do that. But man, he cannot finish. You know what would benefit him? If he could play the game 5 to 10% slower, I think he would have a better chance of finishing. Like he's so fast. It's such a frantic pace, everything he wants to do. And that's what makes him a good player. But ultimately, when it comes down to like making plays and finishing, it's just there's a little bit of like a slowdown that needs to happen. And I don't see it with him. And that's probably because he knows like you got paid. Your role is to be very fast. And, you know, like if he's not doing that, does he feel like he's doing his job? But this is like, I watched Mikheyev here in Toronto because I was doing the games on radio and covering the team very closely. Breakaway after breakaway, right into the pad, right along the ice into the pad, like miss the net completely. Like this is not something new. Like I think if you were expecting him to score a lot, you were going to be let down. But you kind of hope that there was a little more than what he's given you now, especially considering the chances he's getting. Like you guys mentioned, like there are some better chances, some better opportunities, but that's always the case with him. Like
slow it down to like Kuznetsov on a penalty shot slow? Like, is that what you're talking about? That slow?
That's crazy. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Remote control.
Buddy, controller it
slowed down. Yeah, I know. It worked. It works a lot. And that's the frustrating thing, because if it didn't work and he would just rifle it into someone's pads, he would look like a goof. Mm-hmm. But it works a lot, so good for him.
I liked somebody tweeted last night, love the speed and intensity of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's right.
Frank, you're the best. Thank you for this. We'll catch up next week.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Harrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Mitsubishi is in the Richmond Auto Mall. Go to the Richmond Auto Mall right now. Say, Garrison Price been telling me about this Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid. Take it for a test drive. See what it's all about. Get them to put it into power mode. It's particularly fun. The 2024s have rates starting at 4.49%, plus you get the industry's best warranty. It's all good at Applewood.
Hashtags best and worst of Twitter.com. And before we get there, a reset of the poll question here. Should Tocchet have challenged for goaltender interference? Yes or no? You can vote at Sick Harrison Price, Twitter, YouTube. Hashtags best and worst of Twitter.com. Brought to you by Northlands Golf Course. I'm going to start with Kenneth Chan. I am Kenneth Chan of the Daily Ive.
Glad you had it. Yes, it's good.
Estimated cost for hosting 2026 FIFA World Cup in Vancouver have roughly doubled up to $581 million due to hosting more matches, updated FIFA requirements, some stadium upgrades, and contingency funds. Of course, we've gone from 5 to 7 matches here. And so now the costs are between $483 million and $581 million. That's more than double the 240 to 260 that was estimated in 2022. That was before we had the increased matches. Now, the city is covering half of this. The provincial government through PAVCO is covering between $149 million and $196 million for capital costs and upgrades to BC Place. And we found out that BC Place is getting a new center video board. I mean, I thought the one they had is absolutely spectacular. But a new board's coming. More elevators, improved team and media facilities. The provincial government also has to incur the security transportation costs. That's between $88 and $109 million. And the provincial government's figures now estimate that revenue and cost recoveries are going to come in at between $383 million and $436 million. Now, some of that is just federal government money, where the feds are just going to hand them $116 million. Mm-hmm. Some of it's going to come from rental fees, the fan festival. The city's costs being covered by a 2.5% major events municipal and regional district tax on hotels and other short-term accommodations. That's been going since February, and that's going to remain until 2030. Here's Mayor Ken Sim at Ken Sim City, gearing up for the FIFA World Cup 26 Vancouver with Minister Qualtrough and Lana Poppen at today's press conference. With over $1 billion in additional visitor spending expected, this is a big win for Vancouver. FIFA World Cup 2026 is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to showcase our city, and we're ready to welcome the world. I would disagree with his worship in terms of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to showcase our city because, well, we had that 13 years ago.
Yeah, we've had the Olympics. We've had the Women's World Cup. Like, we've had some big events. But what I love about this, and you skipped over one key factor.
Oh, what's that?
Natural grass that could be permanent.
Yes.
They are looking into the technology needed to have permanent natural grass while still keeping their ability to have boat shows and such. Super fun there. The other thing is, with these renovations, Matt, is BC Place going to be pretty good again? Like, it's not terrible now. Like, trust me, I get all these visiting broadcasters coming in Spanish language broadcasters have never been to BC Place, see often a different crew every few weeks for Whitecaps. They walk in there and they go, this stadium is beautiful.
Yeah, it's like the best
they love
in
it.
Canada.
And to get more renovations,
yep.
Like, you know, we don't get things like rugby sevens and all these other events without having a great stadium. Yep. And hey, would I love a 20,000 seat soccer box? Absolutely. But tell me how that's happening.
No. I mean, no one's financing that unless it's Greg Kerfoot and Jeff Mallett themselves.
And it's so much money. I don't know it's just not happening.
We like to bitch at it about it. Familiarity breeds contempt in some cases. We have the best stadium in the country, and we have since 1983.
Yeah. Like, there's really, if they get permanent grass, Matt, there is no reason outside of the extra few time zones for the European players, there's no reason why Canada should play all of their international matches here. You know, it's...
especially if there's ticket demand.
Yeah. Speaking of soccer, at Madrid Universal, from Germany. They say Alphonso Davies will be on the bench tonight, starting at left back at Bayern. This is because he has had a season of ups and downs. Also, Bayern are also putting pressure on him to renew, and their relationship is worn out.
I saw he came off the bench in Champions League.
Played 3 minutes versus Real Madrid.
Oh.
And by all accounts, Bayern as a whole played pretty well. So Thomas Tuchel is going to be feeling redeemed with the decision.
Was it a draw? 2-2?
Did 2-2, I see that? Yeah. Could have won it, too.
Was it at Bayern, or was it?
That was at Bayern, yeah. Oh, okay. But there's no away goals anymore, so it just goes to extra time.
What do you mean?
No, there's no extra weight for away goals. Oh. So if they go back and draw in Real, they just go to extra time. So you win and you're in, you draw and you keep playing.
Well, yeah, and so they have to win at the Bernabeu now.
Yes, yes. But to be a champion, you have to play like a champion. Yes,
I guess one the road to champions.
But I don't think there's a way to save this relationship now. Alphonso Davies will be on the move some way, somehow. Mm-hmm. You'd have to think. Although Tuchel's leaving too, so maybe Davies can claim victory there if the manager's on his way out too. My goodness.
Champions League always goes through either the Bernabeu or the Camp Nou.
Yes, usually.
At Brewers, quote, "There's a base hit for my boy, Tyler Black. You need to see at Tyler Black _6 get his second career hit with his dad on the mic." This is the son of legendary Canadian sportscaster Rod Black. He was a first-round pick of the Milwaukee Brewers a couple of years ago, has destroyed minor league pitching, makes his major league debut on Tuesday night, gets a hit in his first at-bat, so the in-stadium reporter matriculates to the Black family standing by. Sure enough, talks to Rod. Oh, he used to call Blue Jays games. He used to call all these sporting events. In Canada, they're interviewing Rod while Tyler's up for his next at-bat. Sure enough, he singles to right field, and Rod can't help himself. He calls it the play-by-play before getting emotional. The whole family got emotional. Rod punctuated his goodbye to the audience with, "I think we're about to start drinking heavily now." And she said, "Well, you're in the right place for that. Milwaukee, the Brewers." Anyways, it sure looks like Tyler Black is going to be a player here. As mentioned, his minor league stats are unbelievable. He's like a 400 on base guy, a really good professional hitter. And it was an awesome moment to have Rod back on the microphone calling his boys hit.
Oh, and honestly, folks, if you ever cross paths with Rod Black, a gem of a guy. Like just a gem.
There are some people who are on TV that I would say maybe don't go up to and approach at an airport. Yeah. Rod Black is absolutely the guy you go up to and introduce yourself at an airport.
He would love to chat you guys up. For sure. Absolutely. Speaking of baseball, at @Molly_Knight, they're ugly, they're flimsy, they're sweaty, they don't fit right. Now the Major League Baseball Players Union says Nike will fix the disastrous uniforms they designed for 2024. Bad incidents over the weekend. Detroit had a player sliding into home. The pants ripped right off almost. Yep. Like, just disastrous. How do sports leagues and major manufacturers like Nike and Fanatics get it wrong? Somehow they did, but they're going to have to go back to the drawing board. They say probably not all of it's going to be fixed until the start of 2025, including the microscopic lettering on the back of the jerseys that no one can read. Mm. But it is going to be fixed eventually.
At Codify Baseball, teams with an ERA of less than 1.53 in any 17-game span over the last 50 Major League Baseball seasons. There have been 10 of them until the Seattle Mariners on Tuesday night. Castillo throws 7 scoreless innings. They beat Atlanta 3-2. They improved to 17-13. The starting pitching has been exceptional, as advertised, and they're the first team in 7 years to go through a 17-game span with that low a club ERA. It's only been done 5 times this century. In fact, it went a full decade to start the century without ever being done. So, M's, as advertised, they pitched the heck out of the baseball and are right there in the AL West.
And finally for me, at Whitecaps FC, the largest crowd in Vancouver Whitecaps MLS history. Join over 30,000 fans for a record-breaking 50th anniversary match presented by BMO. Be in your seats by 7:15 to kick off the festivities. More than 110 alumni will be featured in the special pre-match ceremony. This will be a short-lived record until the Messi game, of course. It's going to last for a couple of weeks.
A few weeks.
I think we're getting donuts from the Whitecaps to celebrate today, too.
I believe they're actually right outside as we speak here in the lobby of the Wall Center. So let's finish up and say that's hashtags for today. Brought to you by Northlands Golf Course. We're going to be there today and can't wait to play the course. Gary tells me the course is in absolutely beautiful shape. We'll see for ourselves today. 6 to 90 day reservations. Jump the queue. Lock in your dates for a $10 per player booking fee. Limited daily availability there. Check it all out. Go to golfnorthlands.com. Joined now in the Nation Network studio by Frank Cervelli, NHL insider of the Daily Faceoff and the Frankly Speaking podcast before he jets out of town. It's good having you here.
Great to be in Van.
And you're going to roll with the Canucks should they win this series?
Look, I was all in on the Canucks before the season started, so I'm sticking with them.
Yeah.
They need to do their end of that business.
What did you make of last night?
In an odd way, I thought it was their most complete game of the series.
Yeah,
they had plenty of chances, great looks. Rick Tocchet was thrilled with their first period, and rightfully so. And I don't even think they let their foot off the gas in the third. They just, there's a couple untimely goals against and a little bit of sloppy play. Just think about some of the attention to detail required to win playoff games. You can't ice the puck carelessly. You can't take stupid penalties. I mean, you smash a bunch of those things together and a desperate Nashville team that came into this saying, we know they're not going to want to fly back to Nashville. Well, a lot of motivation for them, too.
You think the chances there when they're up 1-0, extending the lead, right? Like, if they extend the lead to 2-0, I don't think Nashville comes back. But it's just so hard to do so in the playoffs, right?
And guess what? Here's the other part of this that no one really talked about after the game. UC Saros had his best game of the series by a wide margin.
A goal he probably wants to have back, but overall, yes, you're right.
Well, the goal was horrendous. Yeah. And he acknowledged after the game and chatting with him that he was so concerned about the Canucks making an east-to-west pass that he was already playing that instead of the shot because he's probably thinking, there's no way Zadorov is putting that top cheddar at that angle. And so he was caught in the middle. But if you take that goal away, he made some seriously good saves. And more than that, some really lucky things. Like there was a couple cross-ice plays. There was one that Saros was swimming way out of his net and the puck somehow got caught up in his pads and squirted the other way instead of through the crease. Things like that, you remember that you're like, oh man, he was really good and lucky. But for a guy that entered the game with an .857 save percentage in the series, he was entirely gettable all the way until game five.
Did the Canucks put too much emphasis on this and not wanting to fly back to Nashville? Did they play tighter as the game went along?
I didn't see that. I thought it was fascinating, though, that Ian Cole said it. Ian Cole is, love him, hate him, whatever you think of him, he's a great conscience. And he said, we've got to grow up, essentially. That was the message. We need to mature here because if we're worried about whether or not we have to fly across the continent again, who cares? Mm-hmm. He goes, I don't care if we win in double OT in game seven, whatever it takes, you've got to win the series. And, you know, I thought it was a point really well made today by Ian McIntyre when he said, if you told this Canucks team before the season started that they'd have an opportunity to close out game round one in game six in Nashville, who cares about flying across the country to do it?
Yeah, they would have taken that for sure. Yeah. I mean, you leave that to the fans. The fans can say, hey, I want Hughes to get better and have a week off and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, you have to be able to roll the punch. Like trying to pick your opponent in the closing weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, good luck. Never works.
Yeah. So, the challenge, where were you on the goal challenge? Was there room to get that one back?
No, I think what's looming, of course, is the penalty.
Yep,
and I don't think you can afford to be wrong. Even as pedestrian as the Predators power play was this series, you know, of course, prior to getting a big power play goal, you know, I don't think I would have challenged.
Yeah, it's a big punishment.
Yeah. I know you haven't been entirely impressed with the aesthetics of this series. Game five was better.
But game five was a good, that's as good and entertaining of a no score game that you're going to have heading into the third period.
Is it just this playoff series that has the lower than regular shot totals? Like to me, they've been more exciting than their shot totals belie.
What do the Canucks have, 90 shots or 91 shots? 91, through five games?
91.
Look, I think it's fair to say that their low shot total has painted a picture of what this series has looked like. Now, have there been exciting moments, like exciting flurries? The only interesting part of game four was the last 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Really, the only interesting part of game one was the third period. This is playoff hockey. Like, I'm not slagging it. Every series is different. And here's the part that I find, it being in this city, people don't understand or appreciate. This is the Canucks doing. This is how they want to play this. Think about how they're deploying everyone.
Yeah.
What are we seeing a lot of? Tyler Myers, Ian Cole, Nikita Zadorov. Mm. I thought in a big way for the Canucks, there was a shift not only in the power and import of Quinn Hughes in game five, but also it seemed like he played more. Seems like there was a game plan change.
What likelihoods of a lineup change for game six?
In terms of what? What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, you know, how married, I mean, PDG did have a nice night penalty killing. So, I just nibbling around the edges, getting Mikheyev off of, like, a lot of people are upset that Pedersen's got Mikheyev to pass to. And, you know, it's just not going to happen for Ilya Mikheyev right now. But not that they've got, you know, a 40 goal scorer waiting in the wings either.
Side note, that was Mikheyev's most noticeable game of the series, yeah, which doesn't really say a lot, because if you didn't tell me heading into game five, I'm not sure that I would have known that he was on the team.
Yeah.
Hoglander, I thought he was way better in game five.
Still, though, you know, you need some bottom line eventually, right?
Well, yeah, you cannot expect to be a 1.5 line team and win in the playoffs. No chance.
No. What about a 2-line team? What about Lotto line and then Lindholm between Garland and Joshua and take your chances?
It gives you a chance. And by the way, Joshua has been really quiet since game one.
Let's see this.
And no one, you know, we kind of entered the series like, oh my God, this guy's going to take over the playoffs. And it's like, ooh, where's he been?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's room for improvement there.
What do you think? Do you think Lotto line becomes a staple here in game six?
I love it as a break glass in case of emergency. And in some ways, I really wonder what the psyche of this team is going to be. How are they feeling? You know, does someone like an Ian Cole who's won 2 Stanley Cups help snap you back in line? Or is a game five loss something that turns into game seven?
She loves in game six?
I would have no reason to divert from She Loves. He's looked big. He's been confident. I love the swagger that he has. He definitely has some big game energy. Mm-hmm. I do think if they lose game six that they're going back to DeSmith for game seven.
What can you tell us about DeSmith? What's the update on the injury there?
I believe it was a slight groin strain that he probably would have played through, except they're already out Demko and they didn't want to have him play and make it worse and then have to go to Shelovs and only Shelovs.
Do you think he'll be 100% for Friday?
I think he's close to 100% now.
Okay.
And do you think Hughes got a little bit better in terms of?
He looked better.
Yeah.
He looked like a different player.
Yeah.
In game five.
Yeah. So hopefully
the offense, everything was running through him again. It just wasn't the first four games.
Further to your game six becoming game seven, by the way, Mark Crawford yesterday told us, back with when he was with the Canucks versus the Wild, they lost game five. He said, we lost the series in game five. We didn't lose it in game seven. And they gave up a 3-1 series lead. So let's hope that didn't just happen.
Zadorov making himself some money here?
I guess. I mean, I got the same question about, was it you guys that asked me whether or not this contract or this playoff will hurt Filip Hronek and his earnings?
Well, the second half as well.
No, that was my next question, actually.
Well, first to answer Hronek, like, the ARB case isn't changing. It's still going to be $7.5 million. So if that's the 1 year ARB deal, what's the longer term look like? Now, when it comes to Zadorov, I mean, I think there's certainly an expectation in his camp that he's going to get paid and paid handsomely. I think there's a real limitation there in terms of what he is and isn't. But this is the time of year when he throws big hits and scores a goal like that yeah. Maybe someone's willing to pay. I just think, you know, to me, I think he's a solid 4-5. And if you start to get into the territory of paying him $6 or $6.5 million a year, there's going to be some varying points in the year that you're going to be really disappointed.
Yeah.
Great seeing you.
Great to see you guys.
Yeah.
We hope to see you again.
Hope to see you.
Yeah. But I hope it's next round.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed. As opposed to, game 7.
Frank Cervelli, everyone. Harrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group. You can text us 778-402-9680. It's the Great Clips text message inbox. Well, a big day for the British Columbia Lions. They get better at the Canadian College Player Draft, the CFL Draft, on Tuesday night. First round pick is George Una, a offensive lineman from the University of Windsor. He's a guard, and he's a mobile guard, too. And it's a position of need with Suk Chung, his age and his injuries last year. Also some uncertainty at the other guard position. And look, Rick Campbell has made it clear. They want to be a more physical team. They need to establish a better running game to compete with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and how good they are at the line of scrimmage and playing that November football where you're going to pound the rock a little bit more. So with stand back, the big tailback now, and you add a big, nasty guard, you get a little more of that identity. They took our guy Theo Benedet in the second round, Blake, the UBC offensive tackle. And look, I know Farhan thought this was a little too early for Benedet because of the free agent agreement he signed with the Chicago Bears, but he's no sure bet in the NFL. And he's a potential ratio-changing offensive lineman in the Canadian Football League as an offensive tackle, and best he had a local guy too. So I think you probably stand a good chance of keeping him here long-term if the NFL doesn't pan out for him. So I thought that was a wise pick as well.
Yeah, and I'm not hoping that Theo Benedet fails in his NFL bid whatsoever, but his is a longer shot. Teams aren't quite as married to their free agent signings as they are their draft picks.
He got some money, which shows some commitment from the Bears. But
we've seen that elsewhere. Yeah, we've made that declaration about prior free agent signees for Canadian players, and it still hasn't panned out. Yep. So,
interesting player they selected next, Ezekiel Tide. He's a former quarterback at Boston College. He got moved to wide receiver, matriculated to the University of Toledo before going home to finish his career at Concordia University in Montreal. We know they're going to play the two Canadian receivers and Katoy and McInnes, so some additional depth there. They also got an interesting defensive line prospect, Kale Dava. Was a freshman All-American at the FCS level at Tennessee Tech. And then they took a big swing in the final pick, the eighth round, Theo Johnson. He was drafted in the fourth round by the New York Giants, a big blocking tight end from Penn State. I'm not even sure what he'd play in the CFL, if they'd play him at slot back or if they'd just beef him up and have him play offensive tackle. But, might as well take a big swing in the eighth round. And then the global draft, they took Torrey Taylor, the University of Iowa punter, who the Bears took in the fourth round of the NFL draft. So I'm not sure they're going to see him either. He's an Aussie who had a record-setting NCAA season last year for the Hawkeyes. Training camp around the corner in Kamloops. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vancouver Canadiens get a win their first game in a week after all of the rainouts. They score a season-high 10
spring
runs.
Spring break. You're allowed one.
And I had my eye on Alek Manoah last night because if his start had gone poorly for Triple A Buffalo, I was wondering if he was going to be on the Roy Halladay program, right, where they send him all the way back to the Dunedin complex and say, okay, Alek, bit by bit, work your way back up to the bigs. He struck out 12 in six innings, only gave up one run. So I don't think Alek Manoah is going to touch Vancouver this year.
And in the end, if he has that precipitous fall, like, are you that excited to see him at the Canadians level anyway?
Well, but at the very least, it's a fascination, right?
I mean, yeah.
As a guy who contended for a Cy Young a couple of years ago, was thought to be the Blue Jays ace. And not to mention, first of all, he's been to Vancouver already for the season. I mean, he's 6'8", 2", whatever he is. Like, he's quite an attraction on the mound.
I never thought Roy Halladay would find his game again. So
yeah, no, ditto. You know, he looked utterly lost, and then here he was.
As dominant as you could imagine a pitcher. So let's hope that's the same for Manoah.
The Seas are back at the Nat Tuesday, May 7th against Everett, and it is the first Toyota Superstars appearance. Former Blue Jays pitcher, and boy, was this guy great in the postseason. Marco Estrada is going to be on hand, the first of four superstar appearances this season. Buck Martinez, Orlando Hudson, and speaking of Cy Young, the Canadian, Eric Gagne, Cy Young winner with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He'll be part of the superstar series this year with the Vancouver Canadiens. Record 33 giveaways this season, including six koozie giveaways for the first six Saturdays of the season from all the beer partners, and a giveaway every Sunday, Family Fun Sunday for kids 12 and under. Tickets 604-872-5232 or go to CanadiansBaseball.com. Got to thank Carl Valentine, Sarita Patel, Spike, and the Whitecaps crew that stopped by today to drop us off some.
I didn't have one.
I didn't have one. Donuts.
I didn't have one.
For the Caps 50th anniversary celebrations. They're expecting a big crowd.
Yeah.
Against Austin on the weekend. You're on the call with Dolly?
I am indeed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Austin's picked up their game too. So it's not an easy out. They're going to have to be on their P's and Q's. Should be a lot of fun though.
Playoffs are here, and we have an army. For once, Nation Gear ready to gear you up with the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee. Shop for that and more at nationgear.ca. All right, poll question results from Tuesday. We asked everybody, did the Canucks win the series Tuesday? Well, we know the answer.
The answer was no.
People voted yes.
Yeah.
85%.
85, huh?
Anthony, I feel like if they lose tonight, they lose the series. I know over dramatic, but this is a big game judging by how the team has been playing. Yeah, weren't very good in Nashville. Guy, people forgetting 2003 and 2011. We will lose. VJ, if they really, really care, they will or should. Well, I think they care, VJ, but weren't able to get it done. And then Run the Jewel says, if they don't win tonight, no way they take all three games in Nashville. We'll be going seven.
And
you feeling seven now?
I mean, I did have that thought as well. But, I mean, we've seen road series everywhere where you do end up taking all the road games. So, I mean, it's possible.
It's conceivable.
Yep.
Grady, anyone pick Vancouver in seven at the start of the series?
No, I can't recall off the top of my head.
I said five.
I took them in six.
Okay.
Was it you that took them in seven? I thought you took them in six, too.
No.
You said seven?
Seven.
You're acting like you're right. You're not.
Seven. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
Errors and omissions brought to you by Yellow Dog Brewing Neighborhood.
I've never wanted them to win more.
Yellow Dog Spirits, Foolish Winery.
Honestly, do you see the smugness there, Grady? Like, it's if he won the bet already.
I could hear it through the voice.
It's unbelievable. I might need to go to Calgary Beer Fest to get my mind off of it. Attention all those in the Calgary area. Grab your tickets. And we know that we have Alberta listeners. Grab your tickets to Calgary Beer Fest this Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. Both Neighborhood and Yellow Dog Brewing will be in attendance along with many other breweries and distilleries from across Canada. Should be a lot of fun.
saying if they win it in seven Sunday, I will be insufferable on Monday.
Oh, just on Monday.
Errors and omissions. I will be more insufferable.
Okay, thank you.
There's an E&O right there. Unusually insufferable. Errors and omissions. John Shannon misspoke when talking about seal-offs and being in big moments. He called it Stanley Cup final game five. No, it is just first round. Stanley Cup playoffs first round. And we had some recording and audio problems with John Shannon yesterday. So those of you on YouTube would have noticed that. We are going to fix that up for John's next guest appearance. Grady, anything else from the E's and O's file?
No.
Oh, wow. Pleased to hear that. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for consuming. We do appreciate you spending time with us. A reminder, subscribe to this show, Rinkwide Vancouver, Canucks Conversation, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on social. It's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. We are live on many of those platforms. 11:30 a.m. Pacific weekdays. And, of course, support the community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.